Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 520.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and this week I'm bringing you a conversation that might seem obvious to those of you who are old school therapists. It was definitely a common thing when I was in school to expect that child therapy involved family therapy. But these days it doesn't seem like that's so often the case. Children have very little power in the family dynamic, and they are usually more of a symptom of what's going on in the family than they are, quote, the problem. So this week, we're going to be talking about bringing parents and the family into child therapy. My guest today is Daphna Lender. Daphna Lender is a family therapy expert and attachment specialist. She's an international trainer and supervisor for practitioners who work with children and families. She's a certified trainer and supervisor slash consultant in both TheraPlay and Dyadic Developmental Psychotherapy, or DDP, as well as an EMDR therapist. Daphna's expertise is drawn from 29 years of working with families in many settings: at-risk after-school programs, therapeutic foster care, in-home crisis stabilization, residential care, and private practice. Daphna's style as a therapist and a teacher is combining the lighthearted with the profound by bringing a playful, intense, and passionate presence to every encounter. And Daphna is the author of Integrative Attachment Family Therapy, as well as the co-author of TheraPlay, The Practitioner's Guide. She teaches and supervises clinicians in 15 countries in 4 languages: English, Hebrew, French, and Spanish. So let's dive right into my conversation with Daphna. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and with me today is Daphna Lender.
Hey,
Daphna,
there.
Thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
It's my distinct pleasure.
Oh, thank you. We met very briefly last year at Psychotherapy Networker, and finally making this happen, I've been wanting to talk to you. I'm really interested in your work around parenting. And before we start talking about our topic for today, can we just start off by you telling our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm a social worker, and I've worked for 30 years with kids and parents. So pretty much in every setting, it was, except for hospital, school, residential, private practice, after school program. So I'm seeing parents and kids in a lot of different settings. And I've traditionally or historically, I worked with kids who were the most difficult kids, attachment issues as a result of abuse and neglect, separation and loss. So the kids who are running to the drawer in the kitchen and taking out a knife and wielding it at their sibling or at their parent when they're mad, or jumping out the window if you tell them they can't go out to see their friends, and, you know, leaving in the middle of the night, or hurting the family dog, and the most extreme attachment cases. So that's kind of where I've gained all of my experience. But then in the last 6 or 7 years, I've been doing private practice, and I've tailored what I think is working with the most extreme cases. I'm realizing a lot of the things that I learned in those situations, they're really relevant to everyday parenting as well. There's a lot of extreme things happening between parents and kids who are not traumatized with abuse and neglect and domestic violence, even like things like having a child with attachment or with anxiety and ADHD. It can be so triggering and maddening to a parent that it brings them down to their knees. And I'm really interested in helping to normalize that and kind of dispel some myths about what helps. And a lot of things that are out here in social media or recommendations like do this, do that, do the third thing, they don't help. So there's a lot of loneliness in parenting, I think. I'm interested in helping parents feel less lonely and less marginalized, and that they have to be perfect.
Wonderful. Yeah. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today. We were talking before we started recording about some of the more recent trends in parenting, you might say. I don't know if you would call it a trend or parenting
for sure.
Styles that have come around can make it hard for parents to feel like they feel like they're getting it right. And they're very worried about getting it right.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you talk about that a little bit? You know, a little bit more specifically, like the different types and stuff?
Sure. I think at this time, there's a lot of information about attachment. And attachment theory, I'm a specialist in attachment theory from the very beginning. Okay, I was trained in TheraPlay. TheraPlay is the first therapy that was ever based on attachment theory, putting it into practice. My mentor, Phyllis Booth, is 100 years old. She's still alive, still practicing. I literally was, you know, trained at her knees, literally side by side with her. So attachment has its place. It is not a theory that can be just sort of transposed or applied to everyday parenting, and especially not on Instagram and TikTok. It does not work because as a paradigm, it's a good paradigm, and of course it has its value. But what's happened is it's been popularized to and reduced down to some very simplistic tropes about how if you had an attachment history that was difficult and you think you transferred it down to your child, because that's what the research shows, that you transfer your attachment style to your child, then, you know, it's like this intergenerational transmission. And so the way to correct it is often that, you know, the remedy is that you're going to be gentle and you're going to validate your child and you're going to be empathic with your child and you're going to be regulating your child through all sorts of very lovely techniques like touch and eye contact and movement and things like that. And of course, I love those things. And if I could be that way with my child, or if I could help people be that way to some degree, I really want to, and I try to. That's like the majority of my work, to try to help them be more playful, to have them be more empathic. However, built into the whole thing here is this implication that's the only thing that is factoring in, which is your attachment style and what happened to you, and that you have to fix it. So you're thinking only in terms of the influence that you have, and that you have to be like perfect. You have to be validating and regulated, and you have to be playful, and you have to be gentle. And if not, so one of the problems is if not, then you've messed it up, and, you know, you're going to continue the cycle, right? So, okay. So we are facing a situations where we're not in control of a lot of the things that our kids are doing, not because we're not good at the things I mentioned, like regulation or validation, but because we don't have control. We do not have control. And that's one of the things that there's like this implicit thing. If you do this, you're going to get this. If you are regulated and validating, you're going to get a child who is, you know, calm and receptive and cooperative. And so many other factors go into the mix. And so that have nothing to do with attachment. It has to do, you know, with genetics and personality and societal things. Things that you can't control, like your spouse or the birth order, or things that you literally cannot control. So what happens? And so let me say, should I stop and slow down? So far, you have things
no,
to say.
I'm totally with you. I'm like, yep, you can't control those things. And I'm thinking, what about COVID?
Yes.
The whole like experience from 5 years ago of this abnormal developmental period for so many kids and families.
Right. And some of COVID was actually really good for some kids, and some of it was absolutely horrible. And they'll be dealing with the repercussions of that for the rest of their life. It's just so personal.
Yeah. Very individualized.
But, yeah. But so we're dealing with what I see. And so I'm a psychotherapist in private practice. I see a lot of parents, but they're moms. I'm going to be honest with you. They are moms who are coming into therapy, and they are asking about how they can change their attachment style, and they're convinced that the child has attachment issues. They end up they're very anxious women who, for them, it's both satisfying and it gives a sense of control to think about it, that it was your own relationship with your parents that messed it up. And also I'm going to add something. Oftentimes the women are thinking that they also messed up in their relational choices with, like, when their child was born, they had postpartum, and so they couldn't take care of their older child, maybe who was two. And that's why this older child is now suffering from behavior problems, or they chose a partner who ended up being, you know, committing infidelity, and they then divorced that parent, and now that's their fault too. Like, there's so many things that women pile on ourselves that is blame, blame, blame. And it's very satisfying to think that you can control it by acting better with your child. And it's very satisfying. To me, it almost feels like an addiction. Like, if I can blame myself and focus the center of the reasons on my bad childhood and on the things I did wrong as an early infancy with my child, then it's like I can feel really psyched up to do better with my child and be really regulated and be really organized and be really empathic and validating. And for a time, it feels good. But then, as everybody knows, you fall off that pedestal when you crash, when you're too tired and too fatigued. And then, because you've done something that isn't emotionally regulated or validating, when your kid, you know, throws something at you and you're at the end of your rope, so that you scream at the kid and you say, you know, like, you piece of you effing jerk, and it's all your fault, and I'm just going to leave this house. And parents get to that. They do.
Yeah.
Many parents get to that. And then the whole cycle starts again. I'm no good and rotten. I didn't do what I'm supposed to. This has totally destroyed my relationship by me saying these awful things. And it doesn't help that the kid often is very emotionally, very anxious too, and sensitive, and says, you know, why did you say that to me? I know that's how you really feel about me. They really compound it. And that actually becomes a really traumatizing cycle for the parent and the child. The mom is trying so hard to be perfect. I'm not doing this in a mocking way, because I really identify with this too, as a person trying so hard. But one of the messages is, we have to stop trying so hard. Stop trying so hard, because just on the most practical level, it doesn't work, because the kid feels like you're making this effort that they fear you are going to stumble and fail. They know that you're then hard on yourself and they feel like that they're the cause of it, they then want to avoid you because they don't want all the drama. It's actually creates more anxiety. And also just the inconsistency of sort of like, it almost feels fake that you're being validating. And then you crash, you know, let's say 5% of the time, but still, it can still feel like, who are you? Are you going to be the really nice mom, or are you going to be the mom who's says really mean things? Well, and I'm not saying that pattern is okay with me. It just, because I think that when you have a kid who's really frustrating, you should try to be regulated and you should try to be validating. Like you should still have limits. Okay. So I'm not saying you shouldn't have behavioral consequences and you shouldn't have limits on your child. I am saying though that when you are trying to be regulated and be validating and keep your cool, by definition, you're going to lose your cool maybe 5 or 10% of the time. And don't be surprised by it. And don't rev yourself up to say, oh my God, I ruined everything. I said this horrible thing to him that, you know, is going to damage him for the rest of his life. I'm no good and rotten. No, don't do that. Because it's literally built in when you're trying so hard to be regulated. So
it's like an unattainable, impossible goal or expectation of oneself to be like that all the time. It's like, that's the perfectionism.
But what I'm saying is some moms, some especially women is what I'm talking about, are almost like addicted to the anxious spiral of then blaming yourself.
Okay.
And you spend quite a day or a day and a half thinking, I am so awful. And you sort of mope and you have like this crestfallen feeling inside and you're devastated by yourself. And then you rev up and you go, wait a minute, I'm going to try harder this time. I can do it. I can do it. You know, now again, this is like a experience that I totally have experienced myself. So I'm not degrading the phenomenon. I'm just saying I want to step out of that and step out of this whole paradigm of thinking that it's my attachment issue that caused it and my behavior with my child when he was an infant. Therefore, now I'm going to fix it by being this, you know, super regulated parent who always is putting my child's needs first and trying to always be attuned and responsive to my child.
Yeah, it sounds like if I'm understanding correctly, it sounds like it's kind of the mother centering herself as, if everything goes well, I did it well. If everything doesn't go well, I did terrible, you know, crushed ego and kind of collapse for the mom, which to me would sound like it could be another response to their own attachment history. So that's where I'm like a little stuck on the addiction part, because I'm like just not understanding like what that is or how that would work. But maybe that's not necessary for me to really unpack that. But I'm just, I want to follow, and like, I'm sure the mom's not doing that. It's not actually making them feel good. It's just more of it seems like it's more of a incorrect attribution of what they have control over. You know, and so that desire to feel the control that if I just do everything right, everything will be perfect and everything will be okay. And then I'll feel okay. And my kid will be okay, because the worst thing would be for my kid not to be okay. I think, you know, a lot of this is sort of resonating in a way with my own experience as a mom. I think, you know, when we were first talking before we started recording, I wasn't sure how to quite make sense of exactly the specific dynamic you were talking about. But as you spoke about what it's like for that mom, you know, I would definitely say that for myself, I was someone with attachment issues who just wanted to be a really good mom. I didn't have any parenting framework to use. So it was just basically a very simple, you know, I'm either good or bad. Like, I'm either good and I was a good mom, or I'm bad. I failed. You know, it was very simplistic, like childlike, because I was 24 years old and I was like, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. And I just wanted to love my kids. But things didn't go wrong with my kids in a way that ever made me spiral like that. other than, as I mentioned to you, like in the toddler years when I had two toddlers and I was just, you know, like working full time, trying to take care of them to the best of my ability and just manage way more than I should have been trying to manage in our home. Basically, like, you know, in the partner roles, I was doing this much and my partner was kind of just going to work and coming home. So, you know, that was totally unsustainable for me. And I did really want to kind of, it wasn't conscious, but I really wanted to appear like I had it all together. And our family was great because that was like some kind of fantasy that I wanted because of what I didn't have when I was growing up, you know? So I think it's just different language, but I'm trying to, you know, make that fit into what I understand about parenting.
Right. Well, okay. So let me go back to something. And because you said two different things and I want to address them both or try. But the first one is about why a mom would keep thinking that, you know, like she has to be perfect. And if not, it all is like terrible and she collapsed. And that you said, and you would attribute it like back at least in part to her attachment history. And I think that's very fair. I mean, we learned that from somewhere, right? To some degree, we learn about that collapse that we have to be perfect from modeling and from the things that we got from our parents. So it's not that I wouldn't, it isn't that I wouldn't focus. So I work with my model. I call it integrative attachment family therapy. I spend a lot more time. I'm a family therapist. I work with parents and kids together. I love to see kids with their parents. This is a little tangent. I'm just going to tell you how my philosophy fits into all this.
Well, I'm loving this part.
Okay. I want to work with parents and children. I do not want to work with the child alone. Okay. And for all of the therapists out here saying to me that what if this and what if that and what if the third thing, and then that's when would you work with the child alone? And the answer is yes, I would. But the community of therapists in general prefer to work with children alone, but they're not doing enough to work with the parents. They say the parents are not. The parents are to blame. The parents are personality disorders. The parents are uncooperative. They want us to fix the child. I've invited them so many times. Okay. Well, I have some ideas about that, about how to incorporate parents, but I don't think therapists have the skills to be able to incorporate the parents enough. And I don't want to work with the child alone because I am not the child's parent.
Right.
It's extremely easy to do well with a child when you're not their parent. And that is the number one message. And a child needs their parent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They need them. So if I want to help, I will do much better by working with the parent and the child together. And I need to get that message out to the potential clients and convince them that I'm on their side as a parent, like I'm on your side parent, and I'm not going to judge you and I'm going to support you and you're amazing already. And there's no point in me working with your child alone in play therapy. Okay, so let me say that. However, in my model, I will tell parents that like the model includes working with the parents alone for about 50% of the sessions. And so that when somebody comes to therapy with me, they're coming because they think their child has a problem, like a behavior problem or an emotional problem, something. And I need to first educate them about what I do, including that I'm going to be working with them alone for about 50% of the sessions. So they, of course, have to be up for it. I explain to them, we can negotiate. It's not like, you know, they have to buy it whole cloth. If they don't like the idea, I'll tailor it. Like, we'll do it step by step. But why do I have to do that? I have to do that because in the first 4 or 5 sessions with a parent, I have to check in on their attachment model. Like they're going to tell me about what happens with them when their child breaks down. They're going to describe what happens with their child. You know, he like, you know, doesn't like the way his Lego tower, you know, was built. So he'll like knock his down plus his sister's and then slam the door and the whole house is like chaos just because of him. Okay. That's what they'll say. You know, that's what I want to work on. Okay. Well, let me talk about you. Where are you? What do you see here? What do you attribute are the reasons why he's doing this? How do you intervene? How do you intervene once he slammed the door? The things that go on, I want to know both what they do and also what they're saying to themselves about themselves on the interior. And then I find out that they, you know, do this whole phenomenon of like, they go to the door and they, you know, try to come in, but the kid says, I hate you, and they've destroyed their room. And then the mom says, you know, if you're going to be this way, you're going to end up being like a delinquent and you don't appreciate what we give you. And like, they're off to the races about all the assumptions, right? And so I have to slow down and check with them about where they got that model. And then I also want to check with them about how they're talking to themselves about themselves. What are they saying? Like, I'm no good and rotten parent, or, you know, I just want to run away. And those lead us to understand their attachment dynamics. And of course I want to identify that. And if we need to tell their attachment story and their history, I'm going to hear it. I want to work with it. But here's the thing. There's a turning point here. I have to decide, am I going to talk to them more about their attachment history and how their parent made them feel, and that's why you act this way, and how can we reparent you? Or am I going to teach them more about here and now regulation and checking with them? I don't want to necessarily hear about the story over and over again and refer back to their parents. I don't want to, because I'm going to tell you, I'll be honest with you, that's what happened to me in psychodynamic psychotherapy for about 12 years. I went twice a week and I loved my therapists, and developmentally they were so important to me. I totally needed to be reparented, and like, there was a time when it worked, but then I developed, I had a huge eating disorder problem. And it was related to my, like, a bunch of trauma that happened in my family, but psychodynamic psychotherapy didn't help me at all. And neither did CBT at all. Okay. So there's a point at which you have to stop talking about the reasons why and work on my feeling is much more on your physiologic experience. Okay. Of physiologic. Now, what I've come to understand in my later years is that I much more prefer to do EMDR and somatic experiencing, which I'm trained in both. And those are much more sensory and physiologic, about slowing down your reactions, being able to touch in with your body sensations, being able to do something to unlock some of the trauma, like the trauma response of being frozen or being, you know, getting really angry and, you know, hot in the face and starting to yell and things. It's so much more about knowing your physiology to me. And I'd rather focus parents on that. That's one thing that I focus on with parents. And so what I'm going to give you, so that was a very long answer to say, it's not that I don't attribute this cycle of blaming yourself and then trying to be perfect again on, I want to hear about the attachment history, but I don't want to focus on it. I want to focus on here and now real life regulation skills for you. Okay. So if I'm talking to you, Laura, it's not just because of your kid that I'm doing this. I want you to know yourself as Laura. Laura was first a person before she was a parent. So how do you feel what are you saying to yourself about yourself when your child is like throwing stuff or being disrespectful or calling you names? What happens to you? And to honor that as a human, and not just like in response to, you know, your child. And I want parents to become a lot more grounded as humans, and then they'll be a lot less reactive.
For sure. You really want parents to become more grounded and be able to tune into what their physiological response is in moments when their kids are losing it.
I think there's a couple of reasons for that, but I mean, one of them is that I feel that there's a lot of freedom. It's liberating to be able to notice your own body and be able to touch into your responses and be able to know yourself. And from there, there's a sense of, I'm learning to control what I can, which is how I talk to myself and how I react physiologically and how I know myself. So some people begin to know themselves for the first time, like what I need to do in order to shake off some of the frozenness or some of the, you know, the dysregulated anger. So it kind of like provides an opportunity for growth. But it's very much focused. It's liberating because it's, let me see how I can check in with myself. And the outcome is not whether my child is behaving better. So I like it.
Yeah.
And I think as a therapist, we always have that pivot point where what perspective are we going to look at? What perspective are we going to focus on? And if a parent has the tendency to talk about their childhood and their parent and become upset and like let out tears and start getting, I'm going to slow that down and I'm going to touch in and try to break it down and do less of that. I want to, it's okay to do a little of 20 seconds of that, but I don't want them to talk about what happened to them with their mom when they were six for very long, because I actually think that it feeds into the anxiety. So as a therapist, I'm going to turn away from that and turn away from the associated like attachment explanation. I'm going to tell it to, and I think I'd like to tell the mom very directly that it isn't, it, you didn't pass down your attachment history to your child like the way it says in the research, because the research is the research. Okay. So I want to like also give some information, like stop thinking about it that way. Let's look at some of the other. So now I would tell parents something a little bit more like, again, some psychoeducation, but I highly believe that children are born with their personalities and their genetics so much more than I do think that it's about nurture, like your person, you know, that nature and nurture debate. And obviously yeah. It's both, but I'm really, really, I tend a lot more towards personality and towards the biochemistry, the genetic part that you inherit and that you come out that way, which means, yeah, of course, parents can give their kids the best outcomes and the best possibilities by getting the right therapy and putting them in the right school. But most of the time, what we're doing as a parent, we're accommodating to the child's personality, which means we have to have a variety of skills that are really, really different than what like attachment parenting or attachment, you know, or gentle parenting strategies. They're so limited in terms of their utility for so many kids, because so many kids, it doesn't work on them because their personalities and their genetics, like, is so different. It doesn't work on them at all.
Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
I didn't really know that. So that's okay. Really valuable to hear. And are there any specific things that we need to know about which personality styles or, you know, it sounds like what you're saying is that the parent just needs to learn to adapt to the kid they're with and manage what comes up within them, not in terms of, oh, I'm feeling like this because my dad said this when I was five, but what's happening right now and what do I need to do to be able to connect with my child as they are without changing who they are in this moment.
Hallelujah. Couldn't have said okay. It better. Right. And when you're able to be more grounded, then you're able to get out of your own way and be able to see what your child actually needs in that moment rather than fixing or transposing, like seeing it through the lens of what's wrong with you or what your, you know, presupposition is about what they need.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that this sort of prescriptive, this is the way you should always be with your children, would feel to the child not authentic. Because if the parent's system is giving off, I'm dysregulated, but their words are very calm and very, you know, practical and whatever, they're not seeming to be displaying through their words and behaviors what their nervous system is giving off, that, you know, that doesn't feel right to the child. That feels unsafe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. That dissonance. Although I do tell parents that, like, faking it till you make it is a very legitimate operating mode. Like, you got to practice being more regulated and empathic and accepting, for sure. And it feels fake and you're afraid your child is going to call you out and be like, why are you talking that way? You're so fake. And then I'll give them like comebacks for that. Be like, oh yeah, you're right. It do seem fake because I'm trying to learn how. Thanks for working with me, kidda. And like tousle their hair, you know. And so it's not, I think that's okay to do, but what I think kids really are allergic to and really, you know, really puts them off is when they feel like their parent is sort of inauthentically, like inauthentic with themselves. Like they're trying so hard to be gentle or to be co-regulated that there's nothing on the inside that like the kid can connect with. Cause you're trying to like just be whatever you think you have in mind that is supposed to be correct. And when you do that for so long and then you fall apart and then, you know, cry or call the kid names or go into your room for a whole afternoon and don't come out, you know, and you don't talk to the kid at all. You freeze them out. If you do that too often, right, then the kid feels like, I don't know which parent I'm going to get, but I definitely know that mom is anxious, that mom can't take care of herself. That she vacillates between being really soft and giving in to then being really harsh and or really resentful. And so I'm just going to keep my distance. I would rather a parent be matter of fact, pretty non-responsive, like not say all the things like, oh, thanks for telling me what's on your mind, or I could really understand how you feel that way, or it's okay to share your feelings of that you're angry with me, or, you know, I'd rather they not do that if they don't feel like they're in that place of doing it, and just go about your business, keep the structure of the day of making the dinner, tidying up the house, whatever it needs, getting the lunches ready, whatever you need to do, chilling out in front of the TV without talking to them, not doing like the optimal thing, which is like, let me do something connected and regulating before bed. Like, just keep it to things that you can do to keep yourself minimally calm and organized. I would focus on that first before trying to work on being empathic and validating and playful. It's maybe, you know, a surprising message to people, but kids want a parent who is organized and predictable and non-reactive more than they want somebody who's warm and playful and super empathic.
Organized and predictable. And what was the third one?
Organized, predictable, and non-reactive.
Yeah.
So like, even like if the kid does something wonderful, reactive would be like, oh my God, what? That was wonderful. You're the strongest boy in the world, you know? But then if a kid does something that is bad, like they, you know, throw something or something that the parent is just like, oh wow, you know, you must be so angry right now. What caused you to do that? You know, or of course, you know, that was horrible. That was my favorite phrase. You broke it. I can't believe how careless you are. I think so. Reactive
people, right? You
know, kids prefer somebody who is just steady.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not the most attuned into the emotions, like in a supportive way, but they also aren't super shaken up by every little thing that happens.
I'm thinking about my own childhood, of course.
Fair enough. And what do you come up with?
Well, I think about my dad was steady, reliable, but pretty unemotional, pretty unemotionally available. And my mom was nurturing, but very emotionally up and down. And a lot of collapse, a lot of just like couldn't take it, couldn't deal with things. But I was only raised by my mom for like my first 6 years. And then the rest, then it was by my dad alone for 6 to 13, and then back to my mom. So who by then was a lot more, she could handle it when it was a teenager. She just couldn't handle it when it was little kids. And it was because of things that were going on too, the backdrop of grief and different things that were happening in her life that impacted her, how much she could really cope, plus postpartum depression. But it did feel like it was a safe childhood with my dad's predictability. But in the moments when I was emotionally dysregulated, because I didn't have much of a, you know, connection with my mom at that time, my dad wasn't, he wasn't like, he had nothing to give. It's like, go in your room. So
fair enough. And I can't tell you how often, and you know this too, like how often people will describe their parents as having those two sort of polarities, which I think oftentimes as a result of like the couple is such that, you know, they're like playing off of each other and one person
compensating
one role. Yeah.
Yeah.
To the extreme. And here's what I would say to parents, like, you can't be everything for your child.
Yeah.
You can't be everything for your child. I'll say it one more time. You cannot be everything for your child. And you have to internalize that. So your dad provided you with the steadiness and the security and the safety to some degree, but during those times where you needed to talk to him most because you felt really lonely or really hurt or lost, he wasn't there for you and he sent you away. So like, here's what the next thing is. People then ask, did you have a secure attachment with your dad? And I'm inviting you to, how would you answer that?
Yeah, I did. I would say so.
And how do you sort of explain that then?
Because, well, my dad was predictable and my mom wasn't. I mean, I don't know if it was a totally secure attachment. I kind of look at, and I'm not probably, you're like seriously an attachment expert, and I would not call myself an attachment expert. But the way I look at attachment, I think of it as like parts of me were securely attached with my dad and other parts of me didn't really trust certain parts of my dad. You know, more than anything, he was safe, reliable. He was interested in me. You know, he just wasn't, I mean, he was affectionate. He did have, even though I said he was emotionally unavailable, it was mainly my really upset feelings he couldn't deal with. But he was, you know, involved with me. He was very present in a lot of ways.
Okay.
But then there was also a lot of time where I was alone because he was at work. And, you know, this was in the 70s when kids were just home alone, like after school.
I know. So here's the thing. The problem with attachment being used as a theory in the mainstream sort of reductionist way is that you're either securely attached or you're not.
Right.
And it's either yes or no. And people who are anxious by personality would likely look at from the very negative point of view and say that you weren't secure. Your same story, they would say you weren't securely attached because in attachment theory, the child is supposed to go to the parent when they're upset, whether they're hungry, lonely, wet, sick, tired, jealous, whiny, whatever, and that the parent provides the safe harbor. So if your parent sent you away, your dad sent you away when you were feeling most distressed emotionally, then you weren't securely attached. You know, I'm saying it's all interpretive about what lens you put it in, like what Laura says about her relationship, like and how to interpret secure attachment. So that's another place where therapists have a very crucial role, because we are really into talking about insecure attachment. Like, we like to diagnose people having insecure attachment.
I don't, but I know what you mean.
Okay.
For that very reason, because I think it's so complicated, but I know that like a lot of therapists do. So I'm with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of now, because of people hearing messages in media, people want to know, well, what's my attachment style? Am I securely attached or insecurely attached? And, you know,
right. And it wasn't meant to be used like that. And it's so binary, like it's black and white. And that, but people really stick, that really sticks with people. And then they translate that into, okay, that's what's wrong with me. And so how do I remedy that? I'm going to do X, Y, and Z differently with my child. And there starts the whole, not to mention with my partner, you know, like, yeah, like, oh, yeah. You know, a romantic partner, right? So when I said you can't get everything from your parent, that means like I, as a parent, I can't give everything to my child and I have to be okay with that. So, and then I say, I think it's more important to be, to provide the safety and the steadiness and to be non-reactive than it is to be, you know, really like into like talking about emotions and being really affectionate and really playful or exciting or whatever.
Something that you want to say about that or about something else that feels important to you? I'm hoping that you can tell people about your course for parents, because it seems like it's going to be something that could be very useful and beneficial for all of this confusing mess of parenting.
Right. Well, I want to summarize, or maybe a takeaway is that you can't judge any parent for the way they behave with their child or how their child behaves with them, unless you have lived with their child for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for about a year. The only people that have street cred from my point of view in terms of dealing with a child is maybe a teacher who works with a kid, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, or preschool teacher, or nanny, or therapist, or a parent, but not a therapist.
Yeah.
So that is the number one thing I want to tell therapists. Stop judging the parents. Stop judging the parents. You do not live with this child, period. And if you did, you probably would look a lot like the parents or some other, you know, version of maybe not the exact same behavior, but based on your own personality. So if that's the case, then we have to have a lot more empathy for parents and work with them. And we're just an aid to help, you know, interpret the child's behaviors. And to the extent that we need to gain the child's trust, of course, we have to play with them and, you know, and work with them, but not alone. And I'll stand by that. Now, as far as for parents, if the idea is to be able to be more grounded, to have more context of, you know, that you're not in control of a lot of things and that that's okay. A lot of parent becoming a parent and realizing that you can't be the parent you wanted to be. There's a lot of grief in that. There's a lot of letting go and a lot of grief.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot put all your wishes and hopes for your child onto your child that you didn't have, and try to put them on your child. And it because that frustration that you're transmitting to your child comes out to them and they hear it loud and clear that I am not living up to your expectations. You know, I tried to transmit that in my, I have a parenting program called the Anti-Perfect Parent Program, and it's on my website. It's a recorded program and it has about 12 hours of just putting together all of this, you know, the philosophy that I'm transmitting here, plus very coupled with some very, very, very specific practical techniques. I'm all about what is practical. That's what you're going to get from me. What's practical? Okay. Of yeah. course, I want it to be connecting, but I want to know, is it practical? So I hope the course is also very practical. And then I have periodic parent Q&As to go along with that the Anti-Perfect Parent program. So yeah, that's something that people could use as a resource. And if therapists are interested, I do a course called the Integrative Attachment Family Therapy, Level 1, Level 2. And then I do a skills group, a monthly skills group that people can join after they take the Integrative Attachment Family Therapy Level 1. And that's all on my website.
So can I ask you about the parenting course? Is it for parents who are feeling that being on their knees, I don't know what to do, in that spiral that you were talking about only? Or is it for parents who are just wanting to not try so hard to be perfect. And, you know, maybe you could tell us who would be the target group for that.
I think it's definitely for people who are more, you know, parents who are more, they're feeling desperate. And the people who are not feeling desperate, but are just feeling curious about how I can not become desperate, or I'm worried that I'm going to get there, or I saw, you know, a vision of myself in one moment and I don't want to do that again, you know, that could be very good for them. I also just think it's a very, very sane, realistic approach to yourself as a person. And so we're always like looking for, you know, a way, a grounded way, like, how am I supposed to act? And I think that the program doesn't tell you prescriptions about if your kid does A, then you should do B. It's not about that. It's like, first about, let me get grounded in myself so that I can use my own self as a like tool to see what is actually going on with my kid and what they need. Then you have so many things that you can try.
Okay. It sounds wonderful. And I definitely think it sounds like something that fills a need in the world of parents who are trying to really do their best. And some of the, you're illuminating for me even more than I maybe already recognized, that some of the teachings that are out there for parents are very shaming and blaming of the parent. And, you know, and in the way that the therapy world works with families where the kids are struggling, or the kids or the family is struggling with the child's behavior, that, you know, it's like therapist knows best, parent can't ever get it right, you know, and for the kid, they can't ever get it right for the parent. So it's this whole just confusing, frustrating, discouraging situation. And
oh my God, all of that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
I'm really glad you're out here doing what you're doing. And I love that you're challenging therapists to realize that if they want to help kids, they need to work with parents and family. That's the way I was trained too, but that's not what I see, you know? And I'll say our training programs too, unless it's a marriage and family therapy program or a really systems oriented program, they're tending to want you to learn skills that you can teach, like DBT. And it's sort of like taking what is in a whole, you know, system and just trying to address just very specific things. And it's missing the whole context. So I'm glad you're challenging that.
Right. Absolutely. I have so much to say about the training programs and how reductionist they are and working like from a medical model or, yeah, from a behavior management perspective. So it's about us, the therapist, right? And it's about then the system. And so family therapy is so important. It's just not popular right now. It'll come back. You know, it goes in waves, right?
Yeah.
It'll come back.
Yep. Yep. It's the newest thing, family therapy. Like, what? That will happen. You're right. Well, Daphna, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me and our listeners here on Therapy Chat today. And will you say your website so that people hear it? And of course, I'll put in the show notes too.
Yeah, it's my name, www.daphnalender.com. And that's spelled DAFNALENDER.
Thank you so much. It was so lovely to talk to you. I could have obviously kept going for a long, long time. So I really appreciate you.
Thanks a lot. Me too.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing. I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.